Chief Minister Alf Cannon has a year left to demonstrate his government can succeed. So what lies in store for the year ahead? Mr. Cannon joins me now in the studio. It takes time to deliver the improvements that people need, I guess. Will you be looking for a second term?
It's too early to say that, Phil. I mean, I'm very conscious, of course, that there's an election in 12 months' time. And, you know, for many people, that will, you know, be factoring into their approach to politics over the next 12 months. You know, I have to stay focused. I have to remember the role that I'm in. And, you know, ultimately, it will be about driving forward as much as we can in terms of delivering on the agenda that we set out, and indeed tackling the problems perhaps we didn't necessarily set out to recognise.
And government inevitably in the final year of an administration has to have at least one eye on an election, and I guess that eye will very much be focused on whether or not things are actually getting delivered, because we've had the strategies, we've had the policies, we've had the investigations, the assessments, you name it, we've had it. But delivery is absolutely crucial now, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that is the critical word that we need to be looking at. That is the word that I will be talking to the Council of Ministers next week about. We will have a full off-site meeting day. We will thrash through the key areas of deliverables, and we're really talking about what we can deliver to make a difference and to improve the island in the next 12 months. And, you know, in doing so, we'll look at all the critical areas at the moment that are challenging us, and we will be seeking, and I will be seeking, for ministers to come up with the solutions that can be delivered. There will, of course, be a need for some strategic planning to prepare the way for the next government. But very much for us, this is about delivery. This is about getting our legislation through and making the changes that we can to increase the opportunity for us to meet the targets and meet the delivery that we wanted to as a government right from the very start.
3 weeks' time, you will be trawling over the aftermath of the Isle of Man government conference. Is this the third or the fourth one now? It feels like certainly the third anyway. And it's yes. Well, tell us about what people could look forward to in terms of that government conference.
Well, I mean, you know, pretty similar to last year in terms of the format. We took it out of the Villa Marina because, I mean, I think as a venue, it wasn't really serving the purpose that we need. We'll run it at the Comus Hotel. Again, this is about, you know, me outlining, you know, by then I'll have a much firmer idea, I think, after discussing matters with the council ministers next week, how we're going to tackle more in depth some of the issues. I'm hoping that I'll be able to outline that, effectively outline publicly, obviously to an audience in the room, but vis-a-vis via the press and other communication methods, what the government will be looking to do over the next 12 months. If there are some announcements that we can make to set the tone, then absolutely we'll be looking for that. But also telling people, I think, some of the reflections that we as a government have had over the last few months and now how we see that moving forward in terms of our approach to addressing the issues that many people will be wanting us to tackle.
One of the, well, yeah, a big, two big issues really, yeah, both related, are the developments of onshore and offshore renewable energy. You, as a minister, and indeed your council of ministers, are in a very difficult position with this, in that you can't talk about site-specific applications. It would appear that certainly the Ørsted one in the timetable that's been issued, the decision is to be taken September, October, November, 2026. So that's effectively the period straddling the general election. I guess, with a fair wind, the Airy Stain application could be in a similar position for decisions to be taken. And yet, as ministers, if you comment you then can't take part in that decision. This is quite a difficult area, really, isn't it? Because I guess there'll be a lot of people will want to know where ministers stand. Are they for or against these renewable energy projects?
Frustrating. I mean, energy is, of course, one of probably a good 7 or 8 real key headlines for the government, and we need to keep working at it. I mean, I know that there are many different views out there on the island, and you can already see from the Tynwald order of business that some of the government's approach to this, some of the individual positions on this, are probably likely to be challenged in an election year. It remains, I think, appropriate for government, right for government, to continue to work at pushing forward an agenda to examine and to try and bring forward the appropriate energy security that we need as an island. I think some of the difficulty here is that it has taken us far longer than one would have hoped to have reached a point where one can demonstrate that we can deliver this successfully on the island and it be of benefit both to our energy supply, but also benefit to our resident population in terms of it can be delivered and there is no add-on cost to this. We're still delivering electricity pricing at benchmark at a very sensible level. And there has been great uncertainty because I think, when you come to the offshore side of things, there's been a lot of work that has been needed in terms of the legislative approach to that. But also, there is still a lack of certainty as to how this will actually work into the future in terms of how that wind farm, were it ever to come to fruition, be connected to the UK grid, how that supply would take place, whether we would actually benefit from supply on the island. And I don't think that sort of uncertainty helps matters. You combine that with continuing developments and advances in technology, for example, battery technology, promotion of household battery technology as another example, and I can see us continuing to sort of have to challenge ourselves in this area, and also reflect and keep on top of the costs and the assessments of these projects as they move along. I do think we would have been in a different position had the government had something actually been delivered, for right or for wrong, but actually been delivered, and we were getting electricity onto the grid, and we could see one way or the other what the outcome of that was. There is clear belief that actually it will be of benefit to the island, it'll be a benefit for our security, it will be not, as people fear, resulting in higher prices, but actually stabilise our pricing and give people greater options. So it still absolutely remains an area that government is going to continue to work at. We will continue to work at that. If after the election there are different views on that, then clearly that's the democratic right. And I appreciate people are going to have 12 months of significant debate, I expect, about the rights and wrongs of planning permission for offshore wind farms, as much as we're having that debate about onshore wind. And yes, there is certainly, and I suspect there will be certainly, an element of frustration if people are asking for views from politicians, particularly from ministers, at the current point about do they think it's right, do they think it's wrong, and they're not getting an answer.
It's not just current ministers either, because of course there's an election coming up. We've no idea. Maybe all the ministers will lose their seats. Maybe all the ministers will be re-elected, but they may not all be ministers in the next administration. And that, there will be people standing who have very strong and clear views, perhaps don't understand that if they express those views, they end up not being able to take part in the decision.
So it's entirely possible that a decision could be made by a new council of ministers, whoever that set of ministers were, which actually had to be delegated out to a separate entity. Now, that could, for example, actually be delegated out to the Legislative Council, primarily members of the Legislative Council, because for during an election campaign, 24 of the MHKs had somehow conflicted themselves.
Yeah.
And in order to avoid the legal challenge that would come with that, that delegation took place. That, you know, clearly is difficult. But that is the law as it currently, you know, currently stands. But yes, I'm not clear as to how that challenge would take place. Hmm. Were at the end of September 2026 there to be, you know, 24 MHKs with clearly stated objections to offshore wind. I mean, I think that's...
Or even the, that in favour.
Well, in favour, but I mean, I think, yeah. You know, but obviously, clearly, there's going to be more difficulty on the latter front. So there's, it is a process. There needs to be proper explanation. You know, now it's incumbent really very much on, you know, a proper planning process whereby people have their views considered, whereby the qualified inspectors who are being asked to assess this now take a balanced and considered view. They will clearly report to the next council of ministers by virtue of whatever happens next. That delegated body will have a lot of responsibility in terms of determining what happens next. But even if planning is granted, as it currently stands, the certainty and clarity about that's being delivered and where it's going to plug into and how it's going to supply energy still remains an unanswered question. So this is all quite frustrating, I think, in many ways. And I suppose one of the disadvantages about being a small island is that getting the certainty in these sorts of and trying to maximise, for example, our own territorial waters to deliver the type of energy that and scale of energy that really is needed for this type of investment, it's probably been harder than people envisaged when 10, 12 years ago, people decided, you know, the government at the time decided that this area of territorial sea should be up for lease.
Well, I think we've covered energy now, so we could move on to some of the other items. I mean, obviously, immigration, migration, border security, that forms a fairly crucial part or big part of your Isle of Man government conference. I think it's on day two. Several ministers will be speaking on this subject. Do we continue to have a problem there, do you think?
Well, I don't think there's... you know, a problem as such, but we do need to be careful about what we're doing. And, you know, we can see clearly, I mean, there's a lot of tension across the water and in Europe about, you know, immigration at the moment, primarily, of course, driven by illegal immigration. And we don't, fortunately, have illegal immigration on the island, although there have been one or two instances where actually, you know, people have been found here without the right credentials, but very, very few cases of that. But, you know, when you've got an increasing economic demand for and growing need for a workforce that can't be sort of staffed from the island per se, then there's obviously going to be this need to find workers from elsewhere. And so the immigration side, you know, the numbers of visas that were being issued, the numbers of dependents that are coming with those visas and the benefit that workforce is bringing to the island is something that needs closer and closer examination. And, you know, I will be challenging the Council of Ministers. We will be discussing this next week and we will be looking closely now at the data that is coming through. We'll be looking closely at the processes that are being applied. And my view is that we need to tighten up on that, because, you know, we need to make sure that everybody coming to the island is providing that economic benefit to the island, and that we're not actually inadvertently increasing costs on the current tax base, and that these individuals are actually costing us more economically than they effectively are contributing. So there's definitely work to be done on that front. And then, you know, alongside that, obviously, we have the common travel area. I think government in the last year or so has given 2,000 work permits out. for the common travel area. But, you know, increasingly, I think there's also a need to know more about who is coming to our island and on what basis they're coming, and a need for a increased security awareness. I think the world is changing around us. You know, I think the demographics by themselves are indicating change. And if you look globally, you know, there is definitely a migratory shift going on, you know, towards the West. And I think this isn't just about today or tomorrow, but this is looking well ahead into the future, Phil. And I think we need to increasingly, I think, take more responsibility for our borders rather than have that outsourced to third parties. And even though we are in the common travel area, I think what my challenge to council now is whether we need more security at the borders and whether we actually need people to be asked to carry identification when they travel. I mean, most global travel now, you are having to carry, obviously, naturally, identification with you. Most people do that by force of habit now, and there is some identity checking going on at airports. But I think we need to be certain that we have the capacity to up security if we need, and to give the police and border controls, where we have them, people involved with border controls, that capability to, certainly I would be looking and asking council whether we need at the moment to have that increased power so that people's that the police and others can feel confident in asking people to provide identification and to verify that they are on the island for the right reasons. There's not a huge issue around that, but I think there is enough now evidence coming from the Chief Constable and others about the threat of organised crime and criminals. We've seen some issues around people trafficking on the island. In a global world and a global environment, in a world in which the movement of people is increasingly becoming more common, and particularly, as I said, that migratory shift, I think we need to ask ourselves a question. It's not necessarily about today and that there's being a problem, but do we need to prepare ourselves and be sure that we maintain our safety, maintain our security for the future? But on the, you know, on the positive side, you know, we do need good people here. We do need to carry on supplementing the workforce. And the migration strategy that came through in July very much also talked about reaching out more positively to the Manx diaspora and trying to make sure that everybody knows that they'll be welcomed back on the Isle of Man with their skills and their families. And so it isn't just, and of course, educating and developing our own youngsters to fill those skills. But nevertheless, those are some of the issues that we will be, I'll be challenging council and ministers with over the coming weeks.
You had a very successful conference this week in relation, I think it was it's to do with the finance industry. Was it financial crime and the elements of that involved in it? Where are we in terms of the whole way in which the world is looking at offshore centres, offshore tax centres like the Isle of Man? At one point, maybe 10 years ago, it seemed like the writing was very much on the wall, and all the governments of the world were clubbing together to create level playing fields in relation to tax, and they felt that places like the Isle of Man needed to be ironed out, so to speak. Where are we now in relation to that?
Well, we have on the priority list this Moneyval assessment that will take place in 2026, October 2026. We are working incredibly hard with the business community in partnership to make sure that we are prepared for that. And it is difficult. It is tricky. I know that a lot of businesses are feeling under pressure as a result of some of the changes that have had to be made in terms of the standards that are being expected for financial services delivery and operational performance. But it's really important that we get through it. The negative side of not getting through Moneyval is that we get grey listed. And of course, there will be implications for banking and for business performance if we get grey list. And we will have to go through the process of extracting ourselves from a grey list anyway. I'm not saying it's the end of the world. Plenty of other jurisdictions have had to go through that. But really, it's incumbent on us. I think the evidence would say that we work as hard as possible to secure this clean sheet, if you like, or this clean bill of health for Moneyvalent. And the way I look at it is that you know, our success really has been built on maintaining standards, has been built on us, you know, reaching out and reassuring the global community that the island is on board with tackling crime and criminal activity. And also, you know, I think it is challenging for business as well. We've got to do that and also maintain the appetite for businesses to be able to conduct themselves legitimately with a level of risk attached to it, because there is always going to be some level of risk for business. Because if you shut that out, then you stop progress effectively, even, you know, in all sorts of aspects. So this is a tough job for us at the moment. Getting through Moneyval is a top priority for us. We've invested hugely in terms of our capabilities for working with the businesses in terms of understanding financial crime and tackling it. I'm sure if we can all once we get through this together, we will be in a much much better place. But we're going through this transition period, and yes, the island needs to maintain its reputational standards if we are to succeed into the future.
And in terms of the long-term future of a finance industry, I guess what you're saying then is that there's a future there. Otherwise, you wouldn't be investing so much time and money in making sure that we meet the exacting standards of the Moneyval assessment.
Of course, there's a future there, but we also have to be competitive, Phil, and that means having the right tax structures and the right. cost base for business, because it is a competitive world. But you know, there are still significant advantages in my view for businesses being here on the island. We have some global leading international businesses in insurance and banking, and you know, they are hugely valuable to us. We need to do everything we can to facilitate those businesses, and we need to work together to ensure that the platform that they're working to, you know, is at the gold standard, so that their customers, global customers, can be reassured about the business that is taking place in the Isle of Man. And I do think we have a strong future. It isn't all just about tax. It's about infrastructure. It's about safety and security. It's about education, obviously, and the way that services are being delivered. So there's a huge amount to it. But and I know there are pressures. There clearly are pressures on people. We need to get through these next 12 months. I believe that once we have got through that and get through all the workings that are going on between financial crime agencies, regulators and business, we can work in partnership together. We'll get through that. We'll be in a much better place. And I feel that actually after that, we will be really capable of growing and developing our offering in that, particularly in that financial services area.
Around about 4 years ago, maybe a few more than that, government commissioned KPMG to produce a report into how to grow the Manx economy. Your government adopted a fair amount of what was in that report, not all of it, but a fair amount of it. Has the economic strategy that you created as a government, has it actually succeeded, would you say?
I think there's strong evidence to say that it has succeeded. Actually, we've put the numbers of people back into work that we wanted to do. We said we'd put 1,500 more people effectively contributing to the tax base.
Phil, but some of that 15... was replacing people who'd lost jobs as a result of COVID.
The 1,500 new additional jobs on top of standing start figure, that has been achieved. I think the interesting point, because it has been a tough you know, a few years with all the pressures that are on people and still on people from inflation. I mean, I see food inflation again is pushing up, and I know that will be impacting on households. We don't seem to be able to get clear of perhaps this long-standing 18-year post 2008 crash, which has caused so many so many issues and frustrations for people, particularly when it comes to, you know, the cost of living aspect. But the interesting point, I think, is that all the figures that we get through are positive. Numbers of people in work, taxation, for example, and you may have picked this up from the Treasury Minister, is tracking ahead of forecast. I think, you know, and we're talking, you know, 17, 20 million pounds ahead of forecast. And that's positive, actually. And I think that is a result of the work that we have done, the success that the island is still seeing, and that some of those underlying trends are healthy and positive, and numbers and visitor numbers are slowly but surely starting to come up. So, and we've some of the connectivity issues that we had 4 years ago, I'm not saying they're fully ironed out, but we have made significant progress on that. We made some progress last year with the steam packet offer. So actually, you know, there has been some strong performance, but there's still a lot, you know, beneath the surface. You know, it's almost, you just can't afford to take your eye off things for a minute. You know, you can't be complacent because, you know, the pressures, the economic pressures that not just here on the island, but driven from across the water and elsewhere are very real. But house prices, you know, obviously in some ways you can take comfort from the fact that we're continuing to sell houses. I know we haven't built enough, but we're you know, they are building, they're selling well, there's plenty of people coming to the island, tax receipts up, more people in work, and yet, you know, there's a lot to do, including getting through MoneyVal, continuing to push diversity in our economy, meeting those tourism targets. So yeah, that's really the picture I think we're dealing with at the moment.
I remember Eddie Lowy, the late Eddie Lowy, MLC, and former Russian MHK, telling me on a quiet moment, what you need to do is under-promise and over-deliver. Do you think, because we regularly hear that this is the worst government we've ever had. You know, that's been the case for probably the last five governments. But there is a quite a significant dissatisfaction perhaps with government, and this is not limited to the Isle of Man, but is part of the problem that you as a government over promise things, and then when, you know, the bright shiny things that were promised in the economic strategy are sort of coming, but maybe not coming as much as the glitzy presentation might have suggested. Do you think that's sometimes the weakness of government? Perhaps if you were a little less bold in what you're promising and then delivered more, people might be more inclined to say, actually, maybe government is on the right track.
It's quite a hard question to answer, Phil. I mean, look, I think you have to be ambitious. I think one thing that the economic strategy was clear in terms of the targets that it was setting out to do. I appreciate many people, you know, disagreed that was not necessarily the way forward, but we did set ourselves, you know, a sense of purpose about our economic growth and what we needed to do and how we were going to deliver that. You know, and things change, you know, I mean, obviously things change over a you know, 2, 3, 4, 5 year period. You know, is it currently the right thing to do? I mean, clearly it is time for us to, you know, to reevaluate that, I think. But again, a lot of the evidence would say it has been successful, as we've just talked about. But I think you do have to be ambitious. You do have to put a sense of purpose behind driving things forward. I would argue that actually when you look across at other places, the island's doing okay. You know, I mean, I think that, you know, jobs figures are still good. The government figures, you know, I think we've got a spending stable. I didn't say necessarily under control, because I think we're going to continue to push forward on efficiencies programs. We're going to continue to look at how government can, you know, save money. We'll be looking at obviously digital and AI, and we need to bring more cohesion to that. So, but there is a sense of frustration with government, but I think with politics generally, actually, I don't necessarily think that's confined to the Isle of Man. But it's, you know, we'll see what happens, you know, when people go to the polls. I mean, obviously, if you look across the water, there's been a complete turn since last year. You've got a new party tracking well above now the traditional Labour and Conservative parties. And, you know, people's views are changing. And I think, you know, there's always been this element, you know, is government now out of touch with, you know, people on the street? I think I've certainly used this summer to talk to as many people as possible. You talk to people, you hear concerns on immigration, on housing, you know, concerns about the economy, concerns about agriculture. I don't think these are ever going to go away. The point is, you know, is the government tackling them? Is the government addressing them? Are we trying to create a better future for everybody? I would say actually, but it will come down to the history books, obviously, that we have set out to tackle them, even though, you know, in some areas, for example, the numbers of houses that have been built, there's some level of underperformance in that in terms of numbers. But I think ultimately, you know, as you say, we are living in a very different world in terms of that relationship in many ways between politics, the direction of politics, you know, and perhaps where the public see the future lying.
We'll move on to efficiency shortly, but just one last area in relation to the economy. And I mean, you were one of the bold band of ministers that decided to purchase the Isle of Man Steam Pack Company. What do you think it should be doing to help Isle of Man government deliver on our island plan pledges and recommendations, promises?
Well, I know that we're talking to the steam packet. You know, that discussion is ongoing at the moment in terms of, you know, that future relationship and what can be delivered. I think you have to take a view, don't you? I guess there's multiple thought process involved here or multiple areas to consider. You know, do you want the company to deliver successfully and be able to pay for itself and to be able to pay for the ships and not to rely in any way on taxpayer subvention? You know, for me, I that is a that needs to happen. I don't share the view that we should run the company effectively at the cheapest possible prices and that somehow the taxpayer should subvent it in any way. I think that would be a big mistake. That will be another drain, and that will be less resources available for health and for education. But by the same token, the company needs to deliver the best value it can for us, both as residents, but also for us economically, in terms of the goods and infrastructure that's being supplied to the island, but also its capacity to bring tourists to the island and to help support our economy. It's an ongoing discussion that we need to have. I think there has been, you know, that sort of period of purchasing the company, the board readjusting to its new ownership, if you like, and establishing that relationship between an arm's length body and the shareholder, and getting that proper understanding around its sense of purpose and what it's there for, and how it needs to adjust its thinking as a board, as a company, not just about itself, but about how it properly integrates. And, you know, to be fair, I think both the board and the chief executive are working hard to connect with government at various levels. And as I say, how that future is pushed forward in terms of pricing, seat availability, etc., is under discussion at the moment.
Because, of course, I mean, effectively, the steam packet, which is owned by the taxpayer, thanks to the sea services agreement, there's a monopoly situation there. Many businesses on the Isle of Man point to freight charges on and off the island as being a cause of concern. It meant, well, most people in the Isle of Man put two and two together and say, actually, rather than making substantial profits, maybe if it made, you know, it was a kind of a break even or slightly more than break even, because when you've got a large turnover, you need to have some level of flexibility there. Lots of people would say, actually, we've given it a monopoly, it's ours. It should be contributing more to helping grow the Manx economy.
And, you know, I think as a concept, that's fine. Well, I agree with that general statement. But, you know, when running it not for profit, I mean, what does that actually mean? I mean, ships, investment in new ships, new vessels cost a lot of money. You know, repairs are ongoing, cost a lot of money. There's not always clarity about the cost of, the breakdown of a ship or the cost that's going to be incurred at its next repairs, but also factoring in that you're going to have to spend, I don't know, 40, 50, 60 million pounds, 70 million pounds more probably, for new ships in the future, and balancing out the resilience of that company versus working not for profit. Or, for example, I mean, people say, you know, cut the freight costs. But the problem is, even if you cut the freight costs, is that going to be passed on to the consumer, or is the profit going to be pocketed by the business? And are they still going to price the goods at the same price as you can get them across at the UK? And I don't think it's a simplistic issue. I think it is more nuanced than that. Absolutely, from a personal perspective, from a councillor minister's perspective, we want the best value. We want the steam packet to perform for the best interests of our economy. We want to see prices affordable for everybody and set at the right level, basically so that the company can run comfortably without taxpayer subvention, can plan for the future, can buy the infrastructure that it needs for the future. And of course, it is up to really the board, I think, to plan strategically to see what else can be done with the business to make it as advantageous as possible to the island. But there was, you know, I go back to the very essence of buying that company, and that was about a monopoly operation that in many ways was just being used to pocket investment bankers and banks and investors far beyond these shores, and actually arguably was putting itself in possibly difficult financial circumstances were things to have happened. We bought that company at the right time because I think, I don't know what would have happened else otherwise during that COVID period, when effectively the island could have been possibly held to ransom, or certainly would have been operating at a huge cost to the taxpayer. So look, we bought it for the right reasons. We need to keep working to make sure it's now working properly for the benefit of the island.
And are we in a better position than we were this time last year? Because last year you were at your government conference very keen to talk about, well, in fact, before the government conference, at the end of the Tynwald sittings for the year, in the July sitting, I think it was, you said, we're going to have serious conversations with the steam packet, we're going to talk to the airlines, we're going to try and improve that whole connectivity in relation to public transport.
And we did have serious conversations. And if you remember, last September, October, the steam packet announced a series of price adjustments, including children go free, 10% fare reductions, equalisation of some, a balance of reductions of fares for some vehicles that were previously being charged the full freight costs. And so actually there was balance bought. There were successful discussions over last summer, and we did achieve some semblance of price reduction, and of course the children go free. And so we were in a better position, have been, I think, for the last 12 months. But like everything else, you know, you have to keep working at these. And as I said, I feel assured that we are having those discussions now. And, you know, within the next few months, I would like to see some more clarity now as a result of those discussions about what that will mean for us as users and as a absolute key asset for us as the island, you know, moving forward.
And also problems with the airport seem to be getting addressed now.
Well, we've had, compared to, you know, we were left with a very difficult position, you know, with from connectivity perspective. And we've worked really hard to maintain that, particularly for air services. And we are far, far better positioned. We've recruited more air traffic controllers. It's not perfect because there are still occasional blips in the system. And, of course, air travel itself has got more expensive. The routes, the people using the routes, we're still subventing routes. Bear in mind, as a government, we've made that decision to support these airlines, to support those routes so that we have that connectivity. We continue to discuss that. That is another challenge for us, for the Council of Ministers. And I think I would hope that within the next few months, we will be in a position, I hope, to be further giving comfort that we have cemented into the future and stabilised some of our air traffic routes.
Well, we were talking about the monopoly there with the Isle of Man Steam Packet Company, and I note that government has finally enabled parts of the 2021 Competition Act. Of course, had that been in force 4 years ago, government could have put conditions on Tesco in relation to the takeover of Shoprite, ensuring Manx producers had a greater percentage of sales guaranteed into Tesco outlets. We're at a position where just 6% of the food and drink consumed on the island is Manx produced food. I believe that Jersey's position is something like 20%. Is government just talking the talk in relation to food security and some of these other important economic factors?
Well, interestingly enough, I met representatives of the farmers earlier this week, in fact, to talk about farming and agriculture. I think we can do more. It's not necessarily detailed as a clear target within our government plans for this year, but I think we can do more. I mean, I was pretty shocked at that figure. I think it should be higher. And in fact, I'm just trying to press to understand exactly what that 6% is made up of, because it does seem extraordinarily low. But nevertheless, you know, I do think actually there is a case that we should explore for a clear target percentage of Manx goods to be sold in the supermarkets, and that we should be doing that not just on a protectionism basis, but about food on a food security basis for the island. And I think that actually, obviously, with food security comes greater economic activity, comes greater certainty for farmers, and actually arguably more choice. So if we do set a target of, say, I don't know, plucking figures out of the air at the moment, 25-30% of your products that you sell must be Manx. That's meat or carrots or potatoes or other types of vegetables. And we can work with industry and say, actually, that's the approximately the sales base that we see. You have to, you know, now purchase 25% of that from the local market. Actually, I think there's an opportunity for agriculture within that. There's an opportunity for farmers to be able to plan ahead for the future. Now, I put this concept to the farming board, the Manx Farmers Union. I think I put it to DEFRA. I've spoken about it with the minister. I think it's worth trying to drive forward. There will clearly be some pushback, I suspect, from retailers. But actually, in the interests of the island moving forward, in the interests of farming moving forward, I think we now need to try and adopt a stronger position from primarily, obviously, a food security basis, but also because of the benefits that will bring to us in the longer term.
And I guess the new powers enacted in the Competition Act will give you greater ability to control that.
Possibly, Phil. I mean, I think that, you know, and I'll be honest, I mean, I one needs to look at these things very carefully, because it's there are technicalities associated with it. But you take that principle. Yes, you take the Competition Act, what that brings. I think there's other acts actually in that have been around for a long time, like marketing acts in agriculture that have also given us potentially powers to certainly help with pricing of goods. So, you know, we do, I think time has come for a much greater look at this area. I think from a mainstream government perspective, you're often talking about housing, the education, the economy, cost of living. What we're doing for our local economy in terms of our food supply, our agricultural economy, how we can actually grow that. I think the time has come to be a bit braver and possibly a bit bolder and take a much more sort of homegrown view about supporting agriculture and getting goods, Manx goods, into the supermarkets, but not just on a if we can basis, but actually we must do it because we need that food security for the future.
We're almost out of time, but believe it or not, and there's several areas we haven't even touched on. Housing, we kind of briefly mentioned. The minister has been on Perspective last week explaining how a new housing agency that's being proposed is going to hopefully deliver where others have failed. It is an area in which your government can rightly be criticised, in that at the election in 2021, this was a crisis. Everyone, all the MHKs acknowledged that. And yet we have lots of strategies, lots of policies, but limited progress in terms of actual new houses, extra houses having been built.
Well, I think the figures will show that we will have built 840-900 new houses will have been built by the end.
Extra houses or just replacement of old stock?
Well, that's new houses that will have been built since over the period of this government. But the bottom line is, you know, we can see from the figures we're lagging behind. So 2016, I think that the island strategic plan at the time said between 2011 and 2026, the island needs to build 5,100 houses. We haven't built that number of houses. There's gaps, and you know, we have sought to address it. We have sought to bring brownfield sites on track to create new units. In fact, you know, looking down the list. Active list of houses under development or with planning approval. There's over 1,000 units currently, you know, either under development or with that approval. So we have actually been building. I mean, let's remove that myth, but we just haven't built enough. And have we got enough affordable housing? And, you know, I think still defining that, what is affordable housing, remains difficult for us. And challenging, and I think there's still a lot of work to do. And I actually feel, I'll be honest, I mean, I think there's more coordination needed. You know, we did set up a housing and communities board to try and bring that cross-government approach. I think we have got a handle on the data, but translating that now into, you know, delivery still remains key for us. And, you know, there's still many delivery agencies with all the local authorities and now a new housing agency, a housing and communities board, the private sector capacity, where those new houses are going to be built, and many ways actually government trying to drive where those houses should be built, because areas are being zoned, but they're not being developed. And of course, the developers want to go and develop on green fields. And of course we have to make, and we're going to do a northwest area plan, and of course some scope needs to be made for delivery in those areas, but we also need to keep working at trying to get those brownfield sites developed where we can as well. So I don't think this issue is going to go away this year, next year. It's going to be with us, and we're going to have to keep working at it, but you know, for all the right reasons have we got a lot of these pressures, because actually our workforce is growing at the moment. Yes, people are moving to the island, man. There's lots of anecdotal evidence about people trying to get out of other countries and come here, but you know, even from our neighbours across the water. Yes, actually the economy's holding up and performing well despite all the difficulties, certainly at headline level. We've got to make more progress this year. Cost of living, we'll be working very closely with the Treasury Minister and trying to deliver a budget that is delivering for people this year. Housing is a critical area that we need much more coordination. the housing agency which is being put together at the moment is going to deliver. We need to see those plans, and we need to get on and build the right type of housing, of course. The story goes on, Phil. There's a lot to do.
And people can find out a lot more about it at the Isle of Man Government Conference in just under 2 weeks' time.
Very quickly, next year, I promised I would mention this, in 2026, Culture Vannon is spearheading the Year of the Manx Language. I think that I was really excited to see their plan, spearheaded by Chris Thomas and the Culture Vannon team. I think we need to get behind that. It's really important that we find and retain and remember our sense of identity in a very globalised world. So I'm really looking forward to participating and supporting the Year of the Manx Language, which will take place in 2026. Goramaya.
That was Aaron Michael MHK and Chief Minister Alf Cannon. I'm Phil Gorn. Goramaya Sungay Sakram. Thanks for listening.